the Packer and Durham podcast.
My partner's Wes Durham. He is back from the links. Mr. Durham, good morning. How are you?
Pack, I'm good. Great to be with you. Did I miss anything yesterday?
Yeah, you did. There was a lot going on yesterday, but I'm sure you were busy looking for Titleist in the woods yesterday. We were doing some heavy lifting yesterday, not only this morning.
Yes, you were.
In the morning, but in the afternoon. There were people still buzzing about the NCAA's decision to tell NC State to go home. And a lot of folks nationwide were really just miffed and, again, and just wondering, what in the world are we doing? And, again, the game went on last night. Vanderbilt won. Game one, for anybody paying attention, they scored a touchdown against Mississippi State in the first inning, which might be the first time they've scored a touchdown against anybody in any sport. But they put a 7 spot up in first, and that was it. And Vandy's up 1-0. So they are 1 W away from winning it all, which in many respects probably put salt in the wound to NC State fans. They're sitting there going, yeah, that really should have, would have, could have, should have been us, right? No question.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. Well, I appreciate Chris Cotter filling in yesterday. Great guest. And had a good time yesterday with David Pollack and his family foundation. They do a marvelous event at the Georgia Club in Statham, which is just outside of Athens, and raising money for not only local charities but also for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. So fun to be there. A lot of saw Coach Rick, by the way, Mark Rick, yesterday at the event. Pack, got to check in with Coach a little bit, visit with him. Taj Boyd was there. Got a chance to check in with Taj. Taj got a lot of questions now. A lot of Georgia fans there yesterday wanted to talk to Taj Boyd about that game one, as you might imagine. A lot of Georgia people inquisitive about Taj and with Taj about the game. So that was fun and kind of had a few laughs with those guys. And Pollock's been working on his swing. Pollock has bought some clubs. David said he would never, ever play golf, Pack. And then yesterday grabbed a club on a par three. And not bad, you know. I sent this video to Herb Street and Reese Davis for analysis. Now, I'm not sure we need all that, but, you know, nonetheless, Pollock's giving it a whirl. And, by the way, for the record, it was just shy, Pack, of about 1,100 degrees yesterday in Statham, Georgia. Just shy of about 1,100 degrees. It was – humidity was up, and it was hot.
Speaking of, not to get off the beaten path here, we're getting ready to make a little family trip out west, coming up here soon.
Yeah.
And one of the spots we're going to hit is Vegas.
And yes.
I this is no lie. I looked up the like 15-day AccuWeather forecast just to see what it was going to be. Wes, I swear to God, on a stack of Bibles, the one day that we're
all hundreds.
Listen, you think I'm making this up? You can look it up yourself. I looked up the one particular day that I know we've got an excursion out west. One day that we're there, the AccuWeather 15-day forecast for this particular day said the high would be 120, and then beside it it has, it will feel like, and it had beside it 142. 142. That's what it's going to feel like. So when you tell me it's hot in Georgia, I'm going to tell you and David Pollack and all them Georgia boys down there, hold my beer. I'm getting to give you 142 coming up here in a
couple
weeks.
Hold on. How can anybody say anything about feels like 142? Nobody knows what 142 feels like.
My bald head is going to feel 142, and I'm going to give you a report from that road trip. 142.
I don't know what the excursion is that day, but I would recommend an SPF of about, 500.
I'm going to tell you where we're going that particular day. We're going to the Grand Canyon, to the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, my God.
Swear to God.
Oh, my gosh.
142 is what they said it's going to feel like.
Unbelievable.
Drink a lot of water.
Wow.
You're going to go Justin Fuente on
you.
A lot of agua.
Yeah. A lot of agua. That's it. Well, the good news is we did get a little bit of news yesterday as it relates to something in the winter. So at least we can think about colder weather. Yesterday afternoon, the ACC and Big Ten, in collaboration with our company, ESPN and Disney, announced the matchups for the ACC Big Ten Challenge this coming year. And there's some interesting games on here, Pac. But there are also a couple games that that didn't materialize, maybe like we had hoped, right?
I don't know who puts this together. Let me just say, I'm going to be completely transparent. I don't know if the leagues do it. I don't know if ESPN does it. I don't know if it's a combination of all the parties above that sit around the room and put this bad boy together. And the challenge has been fun. These two really competitive leagues, it's good stuff, right? Nobody's going to argue about that. Mm-hmm. However, how do we go, and I'm just going to be critical for a second here, how can we go into Mike Krzyzewski's last year at Duke and not give me Duke at Maryland for this challenge? It's just the rivalry was so great when Gary was there and Maryland was still in the ACC. And maybe it's because the fact that Maryland's departure, there wasn't going to be one of those. I can understand politics. I do. But man alive, how cool would it have been to see Mike Krzyzewski walking in to College Park for the very last time and just get that place absolutely rolling. And I think both teams should be really good. That's the thing that when that thing was released yesterday, it was the first thing I looked for. Is Duke going to be at Maryland? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. False. Presented by Dish. Not that Duke at Ohio State's not going to be a great game. It should be. But that was the one that just jumped off the page for me, Wes, that I was anticipating, are they going to give me Duke at Maryland for the last hurrah for Coach K? That would have been unbelievable.
I agree with you on that. Disappointed not to see that potential matchup because it would have allowed us to dive back into all the great history that those two schools wrote in a sequence of games over about 10 or 12 years where they exchanged national titles one year. Duke won one year. Maryland won the next year in Atlanta at the Georgia Dome. They had the great Jay Williams comeback at Coalfield House. In some ways, it is disappointing we don't get to kind of say a final farewell to one of the great college basketball rivalries of really about the last 30 years. Now, I will call your attention, though, when we go back to the chart here, there are a couple that are interesting. One is Juwan Howard and Michigan visiting North Carolina. I think that game for sure stands out. Now, I'll also call your attention to Louisville at Michigan State, Florida State at Purdue.
That's the one.
Indiana at Syracuse. Florida State at Purdue, Pat.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Florida State, to me, again, who knows what a roster looks like in late June? We kind of kid around about that with the transfer portal. But with what Purdue's got coming back and what you expect Florida State basketball to be, that game will be a rocker. And to me, Mackey Arena is one of the most underrated basketball arenas in the country as far as noise, intimidation. And I think Purdue's going to be really good. I think Florida State's going to be good too. That game will be probably undersold a little bit versus, hey, it's Michigan, North Carolina, yada, yada. And that'll be a good game too. But to me, Florida State at Purdue might be the best game on that list. And I would just go ahead and go on that limb right now. I think that game's got a potential to be fantastic.
Yeah. The other two that I'll mention briefly, Indiana at Syracuse, because of Mike Woodson's arrival as the head coach in Bloomington. You're talking about a player on one of college basketball's best teams. Fair enough, right? 1976. That's a great basketball team at Indiana. In the early 80s, Woodson was a star as well. So you're talking about Mike Woodson against Jim Boeheim. Now, for basketball nostalgia, that's a pretty good game. The other one I'll throw out, Wisconsin makes their first trip to Georgia Tech, and you're like, Wes, it's Wisconsin at Georgia Tech. Well, the only other time Wisconsin ever came to Atlanta to play Georgia Tech in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, Bo Ryan brought the Badgers to Alexander Coliseum before renovated and recreated for McCamish Pavilion and lost eight. Now, Wisconsin, we're talking about Wisconsin. They lost a 20-point second-half lead with 14 minutes to go and lost the game, Pac, to Georgia Tech. So, there you go.
Couple things. If I were in charge, and let me emphasize, I'm not. Here's what I would have liked to have seen. Right, let me tell you what I would have liked to have seen. Obviously, Duke at Maryland, I would have loved to have seen.
Sure.
I would have flip-flopped. I would have liked to have seen Louisville and Indiana play each other. I don't care what the venue is. You pick. Flip a coin.
Right, I agree.
Two great places to play a game. And you know, I think anytime you do one of those border things, that normally has a little juice to it. I would have gone Louisville, Indiana as a matchup, mm-hmm. and I would have flip-flopped what Indiana's playing Syracuse. I would have gone Jim Boeheim against Izzo. I would have gone Syracuse,
yeah.
Michigan State. If I were in charge.
That'd been awesome, too.
But those are three games I would have delivered to you. I would have delivered to you Duke at Maryland, Indiana at Louisville, and Syracuse at Michigan State, or vice versa. Whatever combinations you want on who's at home and who's away. All those venues are fantastic. That's what I would have delivered
mm-hmm.
out of that group. Now, you've got five first-time matchups, Wes, that we've not seen, including Iowa at Virginia. And I couldn't tell you what a roster is going to look like. I have no earthly idea. But Iowa at Virginia is a first-timer. Minnesota at Pitt, and given the fact that how both programs, quite frankly, were losing players left and right, I hope they both can form at least a full unit and go after each other. Miami, Penn mm-hmm. State, that's a newbie. Nebraska, NC State is a newbie. And Maryland, Virginia Tech. Now, that game will have a little juice, too. Because you know old Mike Young, who, by the way, just got a new deal. We'll talk about that later on. And Maryland should be mm-hmm. outstanding. Now, those are all newbie games. First-timers in the history of the ACC yeah. Big Ten Challenge. But it's always a great event. It's a great couple nights of basketball, and we will be highly entertained.
Yeah. Boston College is the ACC team who takes a pass this year, right, on yep. the ACC Big Ten Challenge? Okay. Great. So
and a rematch.
Nonetheless.
A rematch. Clemson-Rutgers from the NCAA tournament. We've all been talking about that one, I can assure you. And there will be a Durham. There's going to be a Durham on the sidelines trying to bring some good luck to Brad Brownell. The boys lost that one in the tournament. So we get a little rematch of Clemson and Rutgers on the hardwood coming yeah. up this fall.
Yeah, okay. He'll be glad to know that he got a shout out.
I did. Somebody's yeah. got to take care of your son. At least I can do.
In Piscataway. In Piscataway. Yeah, he'll be in Piscataway,
Bundle
I guess.
Up.
All right. Yeah, it's good to see kind of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. When I saw this yesterday, I thought, you know what? Here we are. We are going back to normal. You know, we're going to get more and more normalcy about college basketball and things like that. In fact, Duke men's basketball on Instagram the other day ran a picture of Cameron Indoor Stadium with all the bleachers out packed and the floor set up. I mean, you thought, okay, we're going here now. We're gonna try and figure this out. So, and obviously we got football first, and we'll have basketball when the winter begins. But that's a good sign for everybody as it relates to when you get the ACC Big Ten schedule. You think, okay, all right, we got a chance. Now we don't know the rosters yet. We'll wait on September 1 to get to rosters. But right now, at least we got a schedule. We have no idea. We're going to dive into something today I think will be fun for you. Take your school. You're a fan of whatever ACC institution. And what's your best moment and what's your toughest moment, right? In the last year. The 2021 academic athletic calendar for the Atlantic Coast Conference is now complete. So let's have an idea of what you think your best moment was and maybe your worst moment of the athletic calendar. Was it in the same season, same game, same sport? You know, we'll dive through some of that here today. We've also got Brian O'Connor going to join us from Charlottesville, the Virginia baseball coach. Looking forward to his comments, especially in the heels. Remember, his team eliminated, then the NC State thing happens. Just some thoughts from another perspective about where ACC baseball might be going to next year. Blake James is Miami's athletic director. Always an insightful visit. We're looking forward to catching up with him. And in case you missed it, Mark and Chris Cotter, and by the way, thanks to Cotter for filling in yesterday. Mark and Chris Cotter had a very, very good conversation with Boo Cargan, the athletics director at NC State. So in case you missed that, we'll have that for you coming up at the bottom of the hour. Sounds like a pretty good Tuesday show, by the way.
Full show, and it's going to be this ACC theme that we're putting on you at 844-SAY-ACCN. Just think of the old wide world of sports, right? The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the theme here.
There you go.
So we're gonna give you our opinions, and then of course you can say, no, boys, y'all don't know what you're talking about. Here is the answer. But we will do this for every single ACC team. The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat of the 2021 sports year. And everybody's got one. Everybody's got a high. Everybody's got a low. And we'll point those out.
All right. All right. Sit tight. When we come back, Packer and Durham cranked up on a Tuesday. Well, Acacia. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, does it? So we'll come back, dive into the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Packer and Durham on ACC Network. Good morning.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
There we go. All right.
I love it.
Yeah. Orchestra leader.
Seriously.
You just want to sit and listen, don't you?
I do.
I like listening to this.
Every Saturday, seriously, every weekend as a kid, you'd hear that music as a kid. And you go, man, it's on. I'm sitting right here and I'm watching Jim McKay, right? Wide World of Sports. That music, that's all.
We're going to take you to barrel jumping in Switzerland.
Right. Or we're going to go, demolition derby in Wyoming. I mean, whatever. I mean, it was just cool. It was so cutting edge and so far ahead of its time, it's not even funny. So that's what we're doing. Thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, Wes. And it's just for this calendar year in the ACC, this sports calendar year in the ACC, the high and the low, the thrill and the agony, right? That's what we're doing.
By the way, quick historical note. The 1978 ACC Basketball Championship, as you know, Pac, was shown on ABC. Remember, that was the championship game that was Wake Forest and Duke, 1978. Duke ended up winning it. Wake Forest had upset Carolina in the semifinals. And Chris Schenkel did the play-by-play. And that show, that championship game, was branded as ABC's Wild World of Sports.
It ranked right up there with every time Evel Knievel was going to jump something. It didn't matter if it's Snake River, Caesar's Palace. London.
I'm not sure about that, but
Come on, man! Remember Evel Knievel? He'd give
Snake
you the
Snake River Canyon. Yes.
Oh my God, it was awesome! And you were like, you were rooting.
I never
for
had
him.
A chance.
And then you had a part of you. They're like, man, I know this guy is getting ready to bust his, you know what? Right. That was all part of it.
Yeah.
God, I loved all that stuff.
I met Evel Knievel. I met Evel Knievel at the GGO Pro-Am.
Oh, did you really? Did he have his cane with him? Was he walking with the cane and all that like he was Elvis?
No, he was not. No, but he had a belt buckle the size of my head.
Yeah. He was a bad man now, Evel Knievel. Evel Knievel.
Evel Knievel, Flip Wilson, and Chief Wahoo McDaniel, in about 15 minutes, all three.
Pop top open. That's what we used to call it as a kid in Greensboro, the pop top open.
The pop top open.
That's what we called it. You going to the pop top?
I know why.
Yeah,
too,
I'm going to the pop top open. You doggone right. Cold chilies and watching shoot 63. The old GGO. Man, that was great times.
That's it.
Goodness gracious. All right, we've gotten off the beaten path already.
All right.
Let's do it.
Sorry. All right. Highs and lows for every team. Now, we're going to throw some suggestions out there.
Right.
But I'm sure fans will have more in-depth ideas and frustrations. So we'll do this in alphabetical order. Don't want to leave anybody on the curb. Don't want to start in an order and, that kind of thing. So let's start with BC.
Wait. Before we start,
can I say
one thing? We always go alphabetical, and I always get hate mail from folks at Virginia Tech. Will you two bumpkins start with Virginia Tech? We are always the last. I'm like, hey, we just lay it out. We're going to cover everybody. So I don't want any more hate mail from Virginia Tech that we do something alphabetically and the Hokies are always at the bottom of the list. We'll get to you. Promise you. We got two and a half hours to kill here. We'll get to you.
And remember this, Hokie fans. Wake Forest is behind you.
That's right. I don't get it. Do I get complaints from Wake Forest? Zero. The Swiss don't bother me. Hokie Nation, man, you always start with Boston College. Well, because it's the letter B. We go alphabetically. That's how we do it. Yeah. All right. Now let's go to BC.
So
let's do it.
All right. The thrill of victory for Boston College in the academic athletic year, the high point, clearly it has to be the national championship in women's lacrosse.
That's right.
I mean, a marvelous accomplishment, three times the bridesmaid. You win the lacrosse national championship, first time in school history. You've got arguably the best player in the country playing for you, who, by the way, is coming back. Scored over 100 goals. I mean, to me, Pac, it might not be the thrill of victory for just BC. It might be one of the thrills of victory for the entire league this year.
Totally agree. 100% on both fronts. This was a feel-good story. The league was really, really good, as you well know if you've watched this at all during the spring. And for BC to come through and figure out a way to finally somebody beat North Carolina, which they did, and then they take care of business in the championship match after so many close calls, going back to back to back. And is it their time? Yes, it is. And I think if you're a BC fan watching us, I'd be hard-pressed for you to come up with one better than that. I think everybody would agree unanimously that that is the moment for BC for the 2021 sports year.
The agony of defeat is probably in some ways the departure of Jim Christian as the basketball coach. Even with a handful of games left to go in the season, Dr. Pat Kraft made that decision. Obviously, Earl Grant has arrived and, by all indications, has created some early momentum for a program that is trying to find its way here in the last couple, 3 years. Injuries and all sorts of things have kind of sidetracked BC since the Kai Bowman, Jerome Robinson team made a run toward the front of the ACC. Tyler Smith offered a tweet along those lines. He pretty much identified this when he said, winning the Natty in lacrosse and going 4-16 for an entire basketball season. So there you go. I think you kind of qualified. I would offer though, and if you hadn't won the national title in women's lacrosse, I would have offered you Jeff Hafley, Phil Jurkovic, the momentum built in football a year ago, the near miss at Clemson, but significant wins and significant progress that I think puts Boston College in a pretty interesting spot this fall. Because one of the things you're going to hear in mid-July all the way to start of the season is, who's behind Clemson? That's going to be a principal talking topic for the rest of the ACC. I think you can put BC on that list right now.
I totally
agree. Paper and the way the schedule sets up, I think you can put BC, NC State in the Atlantic behind Clemson.
Yep.
But after that, I'm not so sure. But those two pack, I definitely think you can enter their names.
Yeah, it will not surprise me. And I'll say this on June 29th. It will not surprise me if we see Boston College and NC State in the top 25 at some point in time in the AP poll before the College Football Playoff Committee comes out with their stuff late October. Would not surprise me to see both of them in the top 25 at some point in time. I think there is no doubt Clemson's the team to beat in the Atlantic in football. There is no doubt that up next you would put BC and NC State. And that's no disrespect to anybody else. But with what they've got coming back, the momentum of the programs, the way both are recruiting, and I'm not a recruiting guy, but, man, it pops up on my screen all the time. So-and-so just committed to NC State. He's a four-star. So-and-so just committed to BC. He's a four. They're doing the job on the recruiting trail. They've got a ton of dudes back, and there's momentum in both camps, in both Raleigh and Chestnut Hill. Are they Clemson good? No, but they're going to get a chance to play them. And NC State gets Clemson early in September. And, of course, BC makes their annual trip down to Death Valley. Seems like they go there every single year. It seems that way for the last three or 4 years. But they scared them half to death last year. Had a chance. So, yeah, I'm with you 100% on everything you just said. Totally agree. 100%.
All right, let's go to the Tigers here. Thrill of victory and agony of defeat. For me, if you're talking about a part of their athletic calendar that has started to spark, and that would be what John Rittman obviously has done in women's softball. Valerie Cagle, the ACC Player of the Year and Pitcher of the Year. It doesn't end the way they want it to in terms of the NCAAs. But Clemson goes 29-5. Their first full season, they win the ACC's regular season. I mean, it's a really, really impressive story for what Coach Rittman and his girls have done.
100% in agreement on this one, too. Listen, Clemson getting to the college football playoff has become so commonplace, you assume it, and that's a dumb thing to do. It's hard to do that. I don't care who you are, whether you're Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, fill in the blank, to get to a college football playoff. The fact that Tigers have gone six straight years, which is the longest streak of any school in college football history, is impressive, and you could easily have put that there in that spot. But I think what you saw with Clemson's softball program, to be able to do that really in their first full season, to win the ACC regular season, one that's been dominated by Florida State, was just remarkable. And obviously the Clemson Nation down there is supporting it. People love it. They're buzzing about the softball. I've told you, I think Valerie Cagle might be the biggest star on campus. She just got a great award over the weekend, which we talked about yesterday in the Best of the Weekend. There's no question the momentum of that particular program is skyrocketing. And I think it's only going to get better, to be honest with you, Wes.
Yeah. The downside, the agony of defeat for the Tigers, might be the way the football season ended.
No doubt.
The loss to Ohio State in the Sugar Bowl was pronounced. And that's a tough night. And it's one of those where if it's handled the right way, it'll benefit the program. And I have no reason to believe it won't be, because I think sometimes, Pac, even the best programs and dominant programs in college sports, or any sport for that matter, have to kind of have a check. And, you know, when you get checked a little bit, you got to find a way to kind of reset. And I get the sense that through the spring that was happening at Clemson.
I know it was. I can vouch for it. I can also tell you it's happened to everybody that's made the college football playoff. You pick a team, and I'll give you a scenario that they got absolutely woodshedded. You want to pick Alabama? Cool. Ask Clemson how they treated them 44-16. Ohio State, ever been woodshedded? Yeah, ask Clemson. They beat them 31-0. Ask Clemson. Yeah, you know what? Ohio State did that to us, per se. And that's what happened in the Sugar Bowl. And I don't think there's any doubt that that was a personal smack in the face that everybody on that football team said, you know what? We got a lot of work to do. And for a program that's had unbelievable success, they're working like they are a 4-8 program. And that makes them dangerous in 21.
Yep. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to watch the Tigers, especially from game one on. Duke is our last school we're going to touch on this segment. You know, for years, spring sports had kind of been just an add-on for the Blue Devils, and this year spring sports rose to the top. Conference championships in softball and baseball for the Blue Devils, and first for each. And congratulations to Coach Young and to Coach Pollard on these, because this is quite a story. Softball is a sport here in the ACC for one, but what Duke did to win the ACC championship, just tremendous, and the same in baseball.
No question. I mean, you pick. For baseball, the Blue Devils win 12 straight. The one zip win against NC State in the championship game was old school vintage baseball. It was unbelievable how great Duke played down the stretch. And in softball, all season long, we talked about, man, Clemson's an amazing story. Florida State's the standard. They don't see each other in the regular season. Maybe they'll see each other in the tournament, the championship tournament. Wrong. They didn't see each other. You know why? Because Duke beat everybody. That's without question the positive. And they do kind of a lot of cool things happen to them as far as winning ACC championships this year. They had an amazing year. But the softball and the baseball in particular, being newbies in that department, have to be on the top of the list.
There you go. Disappointment for the Blue Devils. You certainly could point to basketball. I know everybody was a little taken aback at the tough season Coach K and the Blue Devils had. The turnover-riddled football season, I think both qualify as probably the agony of defeat, Mark.
Well, you know, if Duke football has a down year, the history of their program, even though Cutcliffe's done a brilliant job, you can deal with it. What you don't expect is the Duke men's basketball program to be on the couch while the tournament starts. That you didn't see coming. Not to mention the Duke women's program with Carol Lawson taking over basically gets shut down before it ever could get started. So from a basketball perspective, you always expect excellence at Duke. This past year was one of those kind of years you just want to forget about it and say, hey, rearview mirror, let's move on to 21-22.
Yep. So there you go. That's an early look at the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. More to come here on Packer and Durham, but as we move along on this Tuesday morning, in case you missed it yesterday, Mark and Chris Cotter had a great visit with NC State Athletics Director Boo Cargan. We'll replay that chat right after this on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. We'll take your phone calls with the thrill of victory, agony of defeat. We will attempt and we will go through all ACC teams. So hang tight. 844-SAY-ACCN. While Wes was out there going low and taking all David Pollack's money for charity, we were having a conversation on the program with Boo Corrigan, Director of Athletics of NC State. And Chris Cotter and I started the conversation by asking Boo to kind of take us through the time frame of what went down Friday into Saturday morning.
You know, just the bizarre time frame overall, back as we're looking at the excitement of coming off of Monday and winning a big game against Vanderbilt, a 1-0 game, and going into Tuesday and Wednesday and starting to get a feel for, hey, there may be some things going on with our team and in and around the testing. And you get to Friday where you have a couple of people test positive on Friday. The delay that goes on there to figure out how are we going to play. We come up with 13 members of the pack that go out there and compete at as high a level as you can, right? And going out there and the job that the phrase we're using is Pack 13 does on that day to compete, come back off the field, go back into testing. As a result of the positive tests, we test both vaccinated and unvaccinated players. We find out late that evening that really the goal is to test into being able to play, not to be eliminated, but being able to play. We find out that we've got additional people positive late or early Saturday morning. Was disappointed in that, you know, the timing of it and how we ended up in, I think, about 1 o'clock in the morning. On Saturday, we find out that we're not going to be able to play as a result of 8 different positive tests. And lo and behold, the game becomes a no contest. And, you know, we fought it. We did. We were fighting all the way along the lines. You know me well enough, Mark, that this is not kind of a sit back and let it happen to us, that we were constantly pushing and constantly seeing what we could do and communicating with them. And, you know, we made the decision early on when you go back to September that the medical experts were going to be the ones that determined whether we played or not. And they determined that we were not going to be able to play. And, you know, then we turned our focus to our players and trying to get them home.
Boo, what could you do once you found out after midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, in terms of being able to say, hey, listen, are there other options that we, meaning NC State, can present to the NCAA or the health officials, whoever it may be, and to kind of delay this decision? Was there anything you really could do?
There really isn't anything we can do at that point. We made the decision as a collective that the medical advisors were going to be the ones to drive these decisions. We asked about additional testing. We asked if there was anything else that we could do. At that point, when you're talking about a travel roster, 27 players with contact tracing, with everything else in the numbers that we had that were positive, there were no other options for us at that point.
Boo, obviously, you know, your attention now turns towards September 2nd and USF and starting the football season and getting ready for that. You're going to be in a lot of conversations with other ADs and committees, with the NCAA throughout the summer, as a lot of teams and people point to this situation as a problem and something that needs to be corrected and to not have to go through again. What would your recommendations be to those people in terms of how to make the process better, to change protocols, something we need to do going in the fall so that this type of a situation doesn't happen again?
Well, Chris, the biggest thing from where I sit is the communication and being able to communicate. It's really tough when you got a press release coming out at 2 o'clock in the morning and not much else on top of that. You know, as a group, you know, we did do a great job all year. I think before we start worrying about September 2nd, I think we need to celebrate this baseball team. And it's a shame. It's brutal. It's beyond words that they weren't able to complete their season, right? And we're angry about that. And we're upset about that. But by the same token, it doesn't take away what they accomplished this year. You know, there'll be plenty of time to get to September 2nd. Right now, we need to focus on our players. We need to focus on, we did get everyone home yesterday. Last evening, we had the final players come back, celebrate what they were able to accomplish this year, make sure that we understand everything that occurred, that we're formulating. We've got a group here on campus that's looking at everything that occurred and making sure that we document everything that occurred and where there may have been missteps, and make sure that we're communicating that back with the NCAA.
But when you talk about communication, and really in this particular case, it's a lack of communication. If you had great communication, it would have been a little bit easier for you, the NCAA, for college baseball, for the fan, if everybody kind of knew what was going down. Why were you told anything about why there wasn't any follow-up by the NCAA other than a 2:10 a.m. press release? Because I think they could have eliminated a lot of headache, a lot of chaos, a lot of conspiracy theories. Yeah, it will still hurt. There'd still be angst. I get all that. But, man, if people would have just been able to connect the dots at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, not 2:10 a.m., it would have made life a little bit easier, even though the hurt's still going to be there for a long time for NC State fans. But why was there a lack of communication? I mean, you're in the middle of all this stuff. How does that slip through an NCAA crack?
You know, Pat, I put out a statement at 8:30 yesterday morning. We put out another statement with more details about 5:30 to try to demystify, if you will, a lot of what occurred, and they chose not to. So I really don't know. Kind of asking me to answer a question for someone else. I wish I had a better answer for you, but we don't have one. On why they didn't put anything else out.
Do you sense, and on this, I know it's kind of an obscure question, do you sense that maybe, and I mentioned this earlier, that the passion of NC State fans, and I know they hurt. I know this one may be the all-time gut check, right? This is an all-timer. But all the frustration and angst from what happened at 2:10 a.m. on Saturday morning can be turned in a direction that, hey, you know, Dave Doran's got football rolling. Your baseball program obviously was national championship worthy. You love what Kevin Keats is building from a basketball perspective. I don't need to go into wrestling and all the other Olympic sports where you've had great success. NC State fans want to win, and they want to win big. And I'm not going to go through all the details of how long it's been since, because we can waste all the time with that. But do you get a sense that maybe all of this energy that's being built up in terms of what happened on Saturday night at 2:10 a.m. can be headed in a sense that, hey, guess what? This needs to be kind of activated for our fan base moving forward, that we're here to win championships. And instead of worrying about conspiracy theories and woulda, coulda, shouldas and sue them and let's fight and all that stuff, hey, put that pressure and angst and energy into how do we get better as a program to go win championships?
100%. Yeah, I mean, and by the way, you didn't mention Wes Moore, who's won back-to-back ACC championships with the women's basketball program and the growth there as well. But, no, I think that's what our goal is. And, you know, 2,000 people showing up to welcome a team back on their own. And you know, do you do something when you're dealing with a team coming back from quarantine that's going to quarantine? I don't think you do, But I think them being there speaks to the passion of our fan base, right? Speaks to who we are, speaks to the strength of the pack, right? That everyone involved with NC State is part of the strength of the pack. And what do we do to generate that positive energy moving forward? You know, we're going to do something with our baseball stadium on campus. You know, we got energy behind that. We got the want to. We got an architect and we got a plan. So how are we going to move forward with that? And again, to your point, back, we've had a great year athletically across the board. We've had a great year academically. I think financially we're going to come out of this thing okay. And how do we continue to focus on being the very best NC State that we can be and let that carry us forward?
But one more thing. At the end of the day, I don't think there's any doubt, and I think this needs to be clarified for every NC State fan and college baseball fan, that if there was any way possible to play on Saturday, whether it be 13 guys, 11, whatever, you would have played, right? I mean, if that turned out to be the hand that was dealt, we would have played. But the fact that, you know what, a number, this was nothing more than a numbers game, you didn't have the necessary numbers to be able to participate. Is it, I mean, that's the bottom line of bottom lines, isn't it, for Saturday?
We wanted to play. We wanted to be there. We fought for the opportunity to be there. I don't think it's my place, Pac, to tell people how hard we're fighting for everything, right? You just do. And you fight, and you're angry, and you try to figure out how do we move this forward, and how do we represent this great university? How do we represent and get our players back on the field? But at the end of the day, it wasn't an option. We turned it over to the medical personnel in September that they were going to be the ones to lead us through this. The medical experts came back and said we couldn't play. And while as unfortunate as you can get and as disappointing as you can get, that's where we ended up.
All right. A couple things off of that. I'll give you a thought or two when we come back on the other side. Great stuff with Boo Cargan. And I know you and Chris and all of us here on Packer and Durham, grateful that he carved out some time to be with us yesterday morning on the show. That's a strong statement to come and take questions. And I know he did a couple of other things yesterday, but we always appreciate his willingness to join us to talk about the hottest topics, and NC State baseball is the hottest topic, not just the College World Series. It's one that's going to be examined across sports. I'll tell you about that in a thought that I have on the other side. A quick reminder to you that Friday, we're on the air from 7 to 10, and the moment the show ends at 10 o'clock, the school takeovers begin. And for the next 15 days, you'll get the full boat of great moments from your school. School Takeovers, it's a staple of ACC Network, July 2nd through the 17th, and it's right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. Back with more opening hour of Packer and Durham. NC State's baseball season comes to a quick halt, but we kind of set this course about a year ago. I'll tell you how I tied it together over the weekend after this.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Wes, we'll get your thoughts on Boo Cargan and this whole ruling and all that stuff from Saturday morning in a second. Yesterday afternoon, Kyle Peterson joined me on Off Campus, which you can hear on SiriusXM Channel 84 from 4 to 7. And I asked KP his thoughts about NC State in the NCAA, and he said it was unfortunate. But you know what? The NCAA's hands were tied.
Based on what the policy is, I have a hard time faulting the NCAA with the decision, with how it all happened. Transparency, they can always be better. But as far as the decision itself, as brutal as it is, based on what the protocols are and what everyone knew the protocols were, I don't know that they had another choice. You know, there's some things in life that there's not a shiny light answer to say this is exactly what should have happened. This feels like one of them. And it just you know, it leaves a bunch of kids in a position, many of which, maybe all of which, will never have an opportunity to make right on the field. And that's the part that is the worst.
It's KP yesterday.
You know, Pac, I'm going to – yeah, and he's great, and he's right. But the thing I keep coming back to in the last 4 days, I guess, is that a lot of the protocols and a lot of the rules that were put in place and executed over the weekend were put in place last August and September to get us into an athletic calendar, right? And I think Kendall Rogers pointed this out in the marvelous article he wrote on D1Baseball.com. The NCAA really only established two bubbles for their championships, and that was the men's and women's Division I national championships in basketball, okay? So the other groundwork that was put out there by the NCAA, now when we got to college football, and see, everybody was quick to go to college football, but remember that in football, Pac, we all had different rules, a lot of similarities with the Power Five, but other leagues had, you know, maybe a clause here or a caveat there or whatever the case. NC State, and it is a gut punch, okay? But at some point, the numbers, as Kendall pointed out in the article, and I think it's important to remember, at some point the numbers, and I think Boo said reached eight, correct? Eight positives.
Eight.
Well, when you reach eight positives in a group of 25 or 27, that's considered an outbreak. So therefore, when the outbreak is reached, then it goes from not only the NCAA, it goes to what is happening in county health offices and things of that nature. And yes, it's unfortunate. And how did it happen? And why the testing process? And I understand conspiracy. I get everybody's anger about it. But the rules and regulations that were set out by the National Collegiate Athletic Association essentially last August and September are the rules that were in play in Omaha. And those people were simply following the guidelines of what the NCAA did. Now, you can argue how all of it developed, how it all happened, and things like that. The College World Series was not being treated the same way as the NCAA basketball tournament. And that's immediately the last event everybody kind of pinpoints to. There were two different environments put together. I hate it for NC State. I hate it for their fans. I hate it for the players. Elliot, who's a friend, Boo, all the people tied to the university. And I hate it for the ACC because they did have a chance to win. But unfortunately, the lesson learned in this is they were going by the guidelines that had been set up for almost an entire year. The last thing I'll say about it is this. At the end of the day, the NCAA failed in communication. That's the biggest mistake that happened from Friday after the ball game. Well, actually, Friday when the ball game started to when it was announced early Saturday morning that it was a no contest. The NCAA failed in its communication. Not once did we know during the course of the Friday game that the players not available were at a Marriott testing, trying to get a negative so they could come back and play. We didn't know that until Kendall Rogers wrote the article. That should have been stated by the NCAA. And I know privacy laws and all this other stuff, but we're talking about a team's eligibility in a national championship. That seemed like the only fair thing to do. They didn't do it. If there's fault there, it's in the lines of communications.
I can't argue with anything you said. It was talked about ad nauseum yesterday morning, and I can assure you yesterday afternoon. And, you know, here you are on the eve of really a great event. I've said that 100 times. The College World Series is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday's radio show, Wes, which, you know, we get callers from all over the country. For every Vanderbilt, Mississippi State call, there were 10 calls about how the NCAA's decision to kick NC State was absolutely wrong. Or this needs to be tweaked. Or do the protocols need to be mm-hmm. readjusted? Or, hey, how's it going to affect the 21-22 year? And I do think there could be a trickle-down effect from what happened to NC State over the weekend versus how do you now address the upcoming year? I mean, we got a variant now with COVID, and I'm not trying to put a scare in anybody. If you want to get vaccinated, please do. If you don't, you don't have to. It's America. Mm-hmm. You got a choice. And how are teams going to address that? If the protocol stays the same with the NCAA and you're a head football coach, you know, you'd look at the NC State situation and say, listen, they had this many unvaccinated players. here's what it turned out to be. How do you address that if you're a college football program with your 85 scholarship guys in a very different world than we were even a year ago when COVID had wrecked everything?
Right.
So is a fascinating conversation, and what happened to NC State is atrocious and brutal. But I think maybe big picture, everybody's going to learn something from it, including the NCAA. At least we hope so.
Well, and I'll tell you who else has watched this past weekend with great interest. Has nothing to do with this channel or anything to do with college sports. But the National Football League, I've seen more conversation from people who I know that when I'm in that world pack, the National Football League, who set out 2 weeks ago strong protocols if you've been vaccinated, stronger protocols if you haven't, just saw this happen in Omaha. And you don't think there's concern about that? Everybody's learning something from what happened this past weekend in Omaha. No question about it. Sit tight. Hour two coming up. We got more thrill of victory and agony of defeat. Manny Diaz, by the way, has also taken an interesting plight as it relates to the recruiting world that Dave Clawson touched on last week. We'll just touch on that and give you more school-by-school highs and lows on Packer and Durham next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.